You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet Continuum, and it deals with some of the most fascinating mysteries around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And, of course, welcome back. And as I mentioned tonight, we're going to give away a copy of the paperback edition of Windswept House. And stay tuned for that. When I give you the cue, I'll have you call in, and I will decide what number caller you will be if you're going to get a copy of that book. Very interesting book. Now, before I get started on this, I want to kind of set this up a little bit. Last week, we had I interviewed Malachi Martin during the week. He was unavailable for the program last Sunday night, so we did a taped interview. And we had 2 hours of very interesting discussion concerning Windswept House and other things. The relevance to all of this is that, you know, we're rapidly approaching what we keep hearing to be this new world order. And, of course, as you've heard on this program, we've talked about various things concerning the New World Order that have to do with even UFOs and the paranormal, i.e. mind control, abduction phenomena, that type of thing. Now, keep in mind that Father Malachi Martin is just one of many perspectives on this topic, and some of the stuff you hear is disturbing. Some of you just think it might be, you know, just a load of stuff. That's fine. But anyway, we're going to break it up in these different segments. Now, this first segment we're going to listen to, I asked him about demonic possession, and he had some very interesting things to say, including the fact that he believes that demonic possession is up in very big numbers. And but anyway, we're going to get to that in just a second. Dr. Malachi Martin is an eminent theologian, 30 years as an exorcist. He's an expert on the Catholic Church, former Jesuit and professor at the Vatican's Pontifical Biblical Institute. He's also the author of numerous poignant, illuminating, and controversial writings, including these national best-selling books, The Vatican, The Final Conclave, Hostage to the Devil, The Jesuits, The Keys of This Blood, and, of course, more recently, Windswept House. And he was trained in theology at Louvain. He's got a very impressive background. He received doctorates in the Semitic languages, archaeology, and Oriental history. The guy is just incredible. So without further ado, we're going to go to that first segment with Father Malachi Martin.
It's a very lugubrious. You see, the whole question of demonic possession and the Luciferian tradition is a very disturbing thing. And most people, Catholics included, most bishops, and we have 4,700 bishops now in the Catholic Church, most of them don't want to talk about it, don't want to reflect on it. It's a very disturbing fact. And the fact is that demonic possession has increased. Why started doing anything in exorcism about 1970 of this century, and since then the incidence of possession and obsession, demonic possession and demonic obsession, has increased about 740 to 800%.
That's a lot.
But it's a very great loss. And then the phenomena has changed. We are now facing groups of 20-somethings or 30-somethings coming to us and saying, look, I made a pact with the devil, with Satan, with Lucifer, however they use it, because I wanted a job, I wanted this woman, I wanted the career, I wanted the money. And I got it all, and now he won't let me go. Please help me. I mean, we have that nowadays. We also have the new phenomenon of the demonic possession, obsession of children.
Demonic possession of children.
3, 4, 5, 6.
Good heavens.
Very frightening. It's very frightening. Very hard to deal with. And
let me ask you this. When we're talking about 700 to 800% increase in demonic possession, how does that translate out to men and women on the street? I mean, does that mean that one... I mean, I don't know how we translate that into numbers, but...
I don't know. I can't... It's very hard for me to do that, because, do you know, we tried to do about 20 years ago, we said, let's make the profile of the possessive person, okay?
Okay.
And we did our best. We drew up categories like sex, age, economic status, linguistic background, culture, physical appearance, education, money, riches, whatever it was. And all the other classifications, we found there was no profile. It seems to be completely random. They're not necessarily poor, they're not necessarily rich, they're not necessarily... For instance, I know, in my whole 33 years in New York, I've come across lousy cops and good cops. I've come across prostitutes for confession, and I've come across businessmen. I've come across all kinds. They're just naughty people.
Right.
But they're not possessed. Possession is a very particular thing.
Well, is it something that depends upon the person?
Yes, it depends on the person. They say yes. They must say yes. Nobody's possessed against his will. You don't suddenly wake up in the morning and say, good God, I'm possessed. That doesn't happen.
Let's take for an example. I know that I've heard this before, that wherever there is a satanic ritual or any kind of occult ritual, there is a very strong danger or a very strong possibility that possession will take place. Is that true?
It can't take place without possession.
You mean the ritual and all of this cannot take place without...
without somebody being possessed.
So someone in the group that might be involved in something would be a possessed person.
Who organizes it?
What's the telltale signs of a possessed person? Or are there any?
Multiple. It can be various things. Hold on, please, one moment. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry for that interruption.
That's all right.
I had to get some water. The multiple signs, and there are telltale signs in younger people. In older people, the signs are very difficult to detect because they've learned to cover up.
Okay.
And an older person who has undergone possession probably is what we call perfectly possessed. That is, they're completely tranquil about it.
And they got a smile on their face.
A sort of smile. The younger people, though, rebel against it at a certain moment. And hence you have the phenomenon of getting violent and thrashing around. And a baby, when it's hungry, bangs its head against the ground if you don't feed it.
Mm-hmm.
And we eat also. And there are signs like somebody who's out of control, speaking funny languages, losing control of their bowels, a horrible smell sometimes pursuing them, or freezing cold, or strange happenings, irrational things happening to tables and chairs and pictures and doors and corridors where they walk, or the car they're driving. The signs are multiple, and you've got to be very careful to do a proper diagnosis, because sometimes it's just people are stupid, or whatever it is, or they're afflicted, or they've got a disease like...
mental illness of some type.
Yeah, Huntington's chorea, or Latourette syndrome, all of which we know is due to chemical imbalance of some kind or other.
Right.
Or a tumor in the brain. You know, so all that thing must be carefully studied in a particular case.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're looking today, I mean, here in Colorado, for example, we have a big movement called the Gothic Movement, or the Death Culture, or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
And you see these young people walking around the streets in black and wearing, you know, just odd clothes and strange behaviors, and they're practicing some very bizarre sexual rituals.
Now, I would suspect, but I don't know anything about that group, I would suspect that it is ultimately Luciferian.
Do these people know what they're doing, or are they...
Michael, remember this. There's a great attraction about Luciferianism. And the attraction is power. If you lose the grace of God, if you haven't got it, if you don't pray, if you don't belong to Christ, if you don't belong to God, if you've lost his grace, then the next best thing you can find is Luciferian. Because it's a great sense of power, and it does give certain powers. There's no doubt about that. And Lucifer does help his adepts. He does protect them and aid them. They're not completely without resources. And the training, the formation is such that it makes you immune. You're taught to inflict pain without flinching. You're taught to see death. You start with puppy dogs and cats, and you can graduate to babies without a qualm. And destruction, mainly by fire, becomes a joy. These are the marks of the Luciferian attachment. And it starts in a funny way through some mistake, like the use of an Ouija board, or transcendental meditation, or through hypnosis, or through, as we found out with the 20-somethings and 30-somethings, positive requests.
What type of requests? I'm sorry?
Young men and women who can't make it, can't get that job.
So they actually ask for it.
Well, they ask to make a pact. And then they come and say, listen, please help me out of this. He won't let me go.
Okay, he won't let me go. Interesting. Of course, returning again, taped from New York, is my guest mate, Malachi Martin. And this next segment, we're going to talk about alien abductions, mind control. And, you know, the big question is, what are we really dealing with here? And, of course, this is going to surprise you because it actually surprised me, his perspective on this. But keep in mind that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that believe that mind control and alien abductions are actually related. And the big question is, who or what is behind it?
Listen, I've got to crawl out on a limb on this matter. It is very hard in the face of the evidence we now have. And it's very sparse evidence, but we have evidence. It's very hard to deny the existence of life elsewhere, not in our galaxy, but elsewhere. It's very hard to deny that.
Sure.
On the other hand, we know nothing about it. Nothing.
Or do we?
No, we don't know anything about it. We just don't know anything about it.
Okay.
There may be a small group of men, scientists, who have found out something, but we're not told it yet. We do know that everything that's alive, that lives, comes from God.
Right.
And Christ said, when he was just leaving his apostles, before his ascension into heaven, he said, all power is given to me on earth and in the heavens, in the skies. And we forget that. But that does, I'm not saying that there are human beings.
Or necessarily even aliens.
Oh, they're alien to us.
In the literal sense, they're extraterrestrial.
Yeah, they're alien to us. There's no doubt about that. But there's no doubt about that. The Earth has been under monitoring and probing efforts sporadically in the last 600 years. But we know so little about it that we can't say anything about it except to save our own souls on this Earth. I'm crawling on a limb there because the evidence is just too strong. But we know nothing about it. They're not necessarily human. They're not necessarily evil. They're not necessarily malignant. But they're alien, completely alien to us. And they're as far advanced than we are technologically in certain ways.
Well, some people might say that they're demonic.
No, that's garbage. The demons, you see, we don't know their number. Anyway, by the way, if there are five of us in the room, we know there are five because we count five bodies.
Right.
The demons have no bodies. You can't count them. The differentiation between demons is by function. By function, what they do, what they were made to do, what originally God planned and created them to perform, their function. One third of the angelic host, we're told, revolted and was condemned to hell. They have no bodies. They can assume certain forms, but not permanently. They don't be incarnated.
Disappear. So what you're saying then is that the phenomenon we're talking about appears to have a body of some type, not human.
That's right.
But it is
it's a body.
It
has certain functions like our functions, but not all our functions. And it has abilities that our bodies haven't got. But we know so little. I'm really crawling on the limb by saying this, but this is the evidence.
Well, we're just speculating here.
I'm not really speculating. This is concrete scientific evidence.
I see.
And I'm not speculating. If I were to speculate, I'd say, well, they don't think rationally, or they do, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're immortal, they're not. I'd be speculating, but that they do exist.
Would it be fair to say that their fingerprint is stamped throughout history, even before 600 years ago?
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that. It's not fair to say it. It's not accurate to say we don't know. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. We can speculate about this, that, and the other, but we don't know. And when it comes down to this stuff, you have recourse to strict technological and scientifically based stuff, or else you're launched into, you know, the most amazing speculations that end up really doing the work of the devil, because they're confusing.
Right.
We do know that God sent his son to become one of us with a body and a mother. And he died and effected our eternal salvation so that we will not end up just corpses hidden in the ground because we smell after death. That our soul becomes God's possession again and eventually will be reunited with a form of our body, which will not suffer from the limitations that our bodies have on this earth. That's all we know. We know an awful lot about that, the grace of God and the church and the sacraments and what we can do and how close we can get to God in this life before we die, before we ascend into the hands of our Creator. But we know very little else about it. Then we're discovering that there are beings, living beings, in transgalactic situations which we can't reach. We've no fuel that can carry us there.
Wow.
If it did carry us there, we couldn't survive.
Wow. What an interesting perspective he's got. So we're not dealing with demons, and we're not dealing with aliens per se, but we're dealing with something that's been at least observing Earth for the last 600 years. I wonder what he has in mind. I couldn't get him to commit to too much more than that, so I thought that was pretty interesting. Now, this next segment, we're talking about the Nazis, our government, and what do they have to do with mind control and all this other stuff. Now, keep in mind, we are finding out of late from some very interesting items are coming out, like, for example, Project Silverbug and the entire possibility, and I'm saying the very likely possibility. I'm going beyond, just saying kind of medium possibilities. We're talking about strong possibilities that our government was engaged. We know this for a fact. Our government was engaged and collaborated with the Nazis in some of this stuff having to do with disc technology as well as mind control. And the interesting thing is that Father Malachy has a very interesting perspective on what this relationship is all about and where it is going. And this probably will surprise a lot of you as well. So go ahead.
Well, there's this truth, this much is true, that the Nazis did develop a mind control system, which we didn't inherit. We took over from them.
Right.
And the effect of training our people, which we have done in mind control, especially for the special forces and other such things, such government activities, paragovernmental activities, the effect has been, in very many cases, to produce the same phenomena as possession does.
In what way? In other words, if it's not actually possession, what is it? Is it something that...
No, it is possession.
It is possession.
Yeah.
And the point of it is to eliminate the free will.
Yes. Yes, although that's the consequence. The fact is, Michael, that Hitler's people, and we follow him, we discovered that there are powers in human beings, latent powers, that can be activated with training. And that's the first point. And the second point is that those powers, the latent powers that can be activated with a special, very specialized training, those powers are those we associate with a preternatural condition, like telekinesis, telepathy.
Remote viewing.
Yeah. There's a whole list of things. Of powers, psychic powers, as we call them, they can be developed, and they affect the physical person.
Are they innate in human beings, or are they an agency of this possession?
No. They're innate powers. You see, what we have is a torn nature.
But these forces or powers can use them against us.
Well, that's a big leap. The point I'm making is that our human nature is not in its natural condition. It did some terrible deprivation. We call it original sin in the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
But the power in there, as it were, latently, they are now, you see, if you look at the question of the demon, if you believe demons exist, there are demonic angels. Angels have been demonized. They are not supernatural. There's nothing supernatural about them. Nor are they natural. They're on what we call the middle plateau.
They're stuck in between.
The middle plateau is the plateau on which they exercise this psychic gift. And what you find about possessed people, genuinely possessed people, is they have extraordinary psychic gifts. Extraordinary. And they're evoked by their master, or their familiar, or whatever form the demon possessing them takes. Now, they have found that training these latent powers is very useful for certain types of special forces operations. But one side effect of the whole thing was to end up with phenomena that mimic possession so closely, it is possession. And the rationale, it's only rationale, though, behind that is that anything you have must be for the glory of God, the glory of Christ, and serve the salvation of men.
And if it's not, it's serving Lucifer.
If it's not, you're serving Lucifer.
Very interesting.
So you know, that's the difficulty. And I the saddest thing I can ever find, and I've met so often in the last 30, 40 years, is people whom I know are being led out of all salvation, out of all grace, out of all human hope, by their psychic gifts being developed.
Wow.
By a familiar.
Now,
in their father. Because, as you know, Satanism and Luciferianism is generally generational.
Right.
It's your father and mother rear you to it.
That's how babies are possessed. What you were mentioning earlier.
No, they're not possessed. No, they can be obsessed for a while. Then they must
make a choice.
And they must arrive at the point that they can say yes.
Yes.
And babies can't. But it's a complicated question. The mechanics are very, very difficult to describe in a short time.
In the remaining moments of the program,
sure.
Tell us, what can we do as people? What do we do to defend against this, or, you know, how do we prepare for this? What do we do?
Your own life, personal life, first of all. Be clean. Observe the law. Take your beliefs and refurbish them. Take your faith out of your pocket and polish it up. Give it the coin. And make sure you live according to your principles and not according to the passions that the corrupt world around us dictate. That's all you can do, really. Then, if your function as a doctor, as a lawyer, as a priest, as a clergyman, as a husband, whatever it is, enables you to help people to see the truth and to not live by lies and dishonesty, yeah, that you're supposed to do that. But there's not much else you can do except find the grace of God. If you haven't got the grace of God, go and ask God for it.
Well, that's interesting as well. Now, whatever your perspective is on this whole subject, and, you know, I kind of have mixed feelings about it, as you know from the past and listening to me. I kind of align myself not only with Father Malachy, but with Jacques Vallée and others who have come up with the idea that whatever the bottom line is here, we're dealing with something nasty and maybe not so good for us. I don't know. What do you think? Okay, Father Malachy has got some closing comments for us. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you a story which may shock you. But a young man whom I knew very well, he lived in New York for a while. And he was a young man, my God. You know, he had the usual libido and the usual... He was very honest, good, and very educated, and a good American. But he got to know a girl, and they slept together. And at a certain moment, she said to him, we must drink each other's blood, just a little nick in the arm, and you drink my blood, and I'll drink your blood, and that will cement a pact with the master between us. At that moment, this boy who had been baptized, his angel must have spoken to him silently. He got out of the bed immediately and fled.
So he was presented with a choice, and he obviously had enough.
Well, he just had enough grace
to withstand that,
to get out.
Because I can see that in those types of moments, if a person has no faith, they could be taken.
Oh yeah, and they are taken. There's no doubt about that. And then the snag is, once you're taken, you're taken. And you have no idea of the tyranny, Michael, the painful, helpless tyranny that grips a man. A strong man will cry describing their impotency to escape.
Those very powerful...
They can buy anything, they can have any woman they want, they can succeed in business.
I would imagine that gets old after a while.
You think it what?
I said I can imagine that would get old after a while, and then they find out they can't get out.
Oh, but what I'm stressing is their helplessness and the tyranny they're subjected to. Mind control is not the way it puts it. It's oppression. It's the most extraordinary, and it's a most extraordinary thing, the pain they have, the helpless pain they have. They can do anything but escape it. And their minds, their conscious lives, their sleep, their waking, their lovemaking, their money-making, their everything, is all darkened over by this horrible shadow. And they can't do anything about it. It's the helplessness, the pain. They cry.
Wow.
They weep, tears, and they can't do anything. They're caught. It's a terrible slavery.
Wow. Again, very, very heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. Well, thank you again to Father Malachy Martin, and I want to mention also that the book Windswept House, best-selling novel, is now in paperback in all major bookstores. You might find it interesting. Get a copy of it, because there's a lot more that he didn't talk about on the program. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.